is joining. We have a forum we can vote, but maybe we just get started now and
wonderful
and take off.
Good, good. Well, I'm glad to have everybody here this afternoon, and it's a beautiful day, even though the sun isn't shining like it was yesterday. We're going to accept the blessing of this day. we want to call the meeting to order. First, we want to do a, can we do a roll call now?
No,
or we can't because we don't have a quorum yet. Alrighty. So, has everybody had an opportunity to go through the minutes from our last meeting?
I think we can do the minutes.
It's making your job really easy, John. I know. So, what we want to do is talk about, and Igor, I might need your help on this.
Sure.
We want to talk about the, before we go into our, commissioner highlight, talk about the commissioner vacancy. And I believe we have one seat available.
That's right.
And we'll go through that process of determining who that will be. But if members have suggestions of folks, that would be great, for you to be able to share people you think will be, willing, first of all, and then also a contributor in specific spaces that they are in, that are probably not covered. That would be my preference, that are not covered by the groups of folks that we have here right now. Just to add some more variety to the people that are participating here on the commission. Igor, do you have anything else?
No, I think that's really well said. I think, trying to think about maybe what are the sectors that aren't currently represented here? Who are some of the members of the community, who is important to making sure we have good contact with? And then I think the most important thing is someone you all would enjoy working with. I don't think you can understate how important that is to just have someone who will show up for the meetings and do the work, and you'll enjoy spending time with them. So if you have any suggestions, please let me know. We're happy to do some of that outreach for you. Or if you want to connect us, we're happy to meet with them individually and talk to them about the commission. But we really do want to fill that vacancy. And so please just let us know, and we'll be starting those interview processes in a little while. This is jumping a little bit ahead of the schedule, but we've been waiting to do that till we had our new deputy director on board. And so I do just want to recognize our new deputy director, Eddie Thompson.
Woohoo!
Eddie, do you want to just say a few words about your background, your experience?
Yeah, a little bit of background on me. First of all, thank you, Igor, for having me today, and thank you to the commission. I've been with the Martin Luther King Human Rights Commission for about 8 years, I believe. So I've been partnered with some of you, and really enjoy the opportunity to be in community and to help build and grow, develop, all the things that we're doing, especially with our youth programming. I've been with L3 Harris for about 20 years. But also do a lot of community engagement and opportunities and activities and activations to make sure that our youth have all the different opportunities that can be made available to them. So just thank you again.
Yeah, we're really excited to have Eddie on board. He has long relationships with the community and with the MCA, so it's really just great to have him.
Yeah.
And we jumped ahead just for a little quick second there, but one of the things that we want to do now today and in the future is have a commissioner highlight. And here we're just going to ask you to give us a little bit of oversight or overview of who you are, what you do, what really drives you, in about 2 or 3 minutes just to share about yourself. So today we've asked Emmy Gardner to share about herself. And, Emmy, I'm going to let you take it from here.
Sure. Hello, everybody on screen and in the room. Emmy Gardner, I am a, 40-plus year licensed clinical social worker. Spent, as we were talking to Tom, 30-plus years at Primary Children's in a variety of mental health and healthcare arenas. So I guess you could say my passion is really health and mental health care, primarily for kids, but for families in general. I currently work for a small nonprofit in the community called Holy Cross Ministries. We are squarely in the space of health, education, and justice, really supporting our immigrant community, empowering them on paths to self-sufficiency. So we have early childhood programming. We have trauma-informed counseling. We work 80+% of the folks that we work with are survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking. So we're really trying to help folks on their healing journey. And then we also are, unlike most nonprofits or social service agencies, we also have a large legal immigration department with attorneys and Department of Justice accredited reps to help immigrants and refugees on their citizenship journey. So just really trying to kind of lead out with a lot of love, compassion, and support for the entire community. Kind of, I believe that's definitely the Utah way, and we're just really trying to really kind of highlight that. In the last 2 or 3 years, we've gotten far more into the education and advocacy space with the legislature. I'm on the board for Voices for Utah Children's and just really trying to, again, kind of, I think, pursue and push legislation powering the entire community. So we're really busy and grateful the session is done. It's been a busy 45 days. So thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing with us. Okay, well, we're going to go into our CCE legislative.
So we actually have a quorum now.
Oh, we have a quorum.
So if you want to do
wonderful.
The roll call out of the minutes.
Wonderful. Can we do a roll call here? I think I have everybody's, all the members' names here. Yeah, I've got it here too. Okay.
That's not everyone, yeah.
Well, that's not
That's probably
good. You get a first.
So, everybody ready?
Yes.
Do a quick roll call. Luna? Here?
First and second.
Oh, first and second.
For the minutes.
For the minutes.
Yes. Yes. Luna Benari? Tyler Clancy? Not here yet. Amy Gardner?
Here.
Tracy Gruber?
I'm here.
Meredith Lamb? Brianna Medina, Jefferson Moss, Sean Newell here, Kevin Wynn,
here.
Well, buddy, Rich Nye,
yes.
Tom Ross, see you, Tom.
Here.
Terras, Kafare.
Yeah, here.
Lovely, Terras. Okay, wonderful. Glad to see everybody's here. Now, we'll step into the minutes. Have everybody had a chance to look at our minutes from January 13th? Those were sent out quite a while ago. Hopefully everybody had a chance to see them. Can I get a motion to accept the minutes from January 13th?
So moved.
We got a motion from Emmy. Can I get a second?
I'll second it, Tom.
Wonderful. We've got a second from Tom. Thank you very much, and that is our minutes.
And then can you do another roll call vote for the minutes?
Oh, you have to do another roll call vote. Okay, this roll call vote is for the minutes. Luna Benari? Tyler Clancy? Amy Gardner?
Yes.
Yes.
Meredith Lamb? Rihanna Medina? Jefferson Moss? Sean Newell? I'm a yes. Kevin Wynn?
Yes.
Rich Nye?
Yes.
Tom Ross?
Yes.
Taras Tafer?
Yes.
Is the last name correct? Okay, great. Wonderful.
And then,
we've got, I skipped right over you. Casey Gruber. Golly. How did I go? I didn't see it. I'm just throwing me off a little bit. Wonderful. Thank you.
Sean, this is Rihanna Medina. I had to jump in a little late, so I just wanted to make sure you get
wonderful. Glad to see you, Rihanna.
Thank you.
We've got Rihanna.
Okay. Rihanna, did you vote in the affirmative for the minute?
I just jumped in the call right now.
Okay, that's okay.
Okay. Have you had a chance to review the minutes from January 13th?
Yes, I did, and I would vote in the affirmative.
Wonderful. Thank you. All righty. Now I think we're ready to move on.
I think we're ready for a legislative update.
Well, I'm sure many people already know how the legislative session ended and that it did end last Friday. For those who don't know me, I'm Kat Potter. I'm the deputy director at the Department of Cultural and Community Engagement. So I just wanted to give a quick update on how the legislature affected our department, CCE, and also the Division of Multicultural Affairs. So this was not a session where there was a lot of money to be distributed. We did get some one-time funding for a few of our projects. Some of them relate to America 250, the Great American State Fair. We got some one-time funding for the Volunteer for Good initiative, which is a an initiative through USERV Utah to promote volunteerism in high schools. And then we did receive $500,000 one time for an awareness campaign for literacy, which we will be working with partner agencies, partner organizations, probably passing through most of that funding. But we also hope to be somewhat involved in maybe spreading that messaging, since that's an important initiative for the state and also for our department. We did get cuts in some of our divisions, as expected. We know that this is a lean year, and there was a need to find some funding in different places. And I know some of our sister agencies across state government have also received cuts. They were fairly minimal. We did not get significant cuts. We initially entered into the budget season thinking we might get a significant hit to our STEM Action Center, but we've worked with our legislative partners to minimize that cut. And actually, MCA has not received any cut, so the division will remain whole and Yay. Have the same carryover budget. So that's a great place.
Yeah.
I will say that we had a hit to our Arts Museums grants budget. We had about $1 million taken from that grant budget. So we will be working with cultural organizations to figure out how we can continue to support them. We still have $3 million in that grant fund though, so we'll still be maintaining that grant program, just at a slightly smaller level. In terms of bills, we were tracking a lot of bills this session, as I know many of you were, more than 1,000 bills that were numbered. I think there were about 550 that ended up passing, so not quite half, maybe about half. But a lot of the bills we were tracking that impacted multicultural communities actually did not end up making it all the way through the process. One of the bills that we're very happy did was Senator Milner's early literacy bill. I know we've talked about literacy quite a bit in this commission. And that, if you want to look more at that, it's SB 241. And that provides some funding for paraprofessionals in the classroom, but it sets goals for literacy standards. And we know that our third grade reading levels across the state are much lower than we'd like. I think they're, you don't know for sure, it's 52%?
Depending on how it's calculated.
Yes.
Yes.
And the goal that has been in statute for a long time is 70%. And actually, this bill increased that goal to 80% literacy. At grade level literacy by the year 2030. So I think that's a really wonderful, aggressive goal to get our students up to their reading potential, their literacy potential. And I know we're going to talk about that a little more in this meeting and how we can re-involve this commission in that process. In terms of other bills, there were some bills that impacted our employee compensation. We're looking at an additional cost of living increase and some pay performance increases and some benefit changes. But if there are any questions that anyone has about specific bills that impact the constituents we serve, just reach out to me. Again, other state agency directors in the room probably have the same information I do, but I'm happy to support any questions that you have about the session. Thank you.
Quick question. Yeah. On the awareness of early literacy for this division, mm-hmm. how will that be implemented, those funds be implemented?
We're not sure yet. Okay. I think we're going to be working with some of our partners to best understand if there's already a partner that's been identified for those funds. Right now, we know that they're going to pass through our agency, and we'll pass them on. And I'm not sure if you have any more information about that awareness initiative.
Yeah, right. It's a literacy campaign of sorts, right? So the idea was that they would be flow through to the exact expenditure. Now it's still to be determined.
I think through
procurement issues.
Mm-hmm.
Want to navigate those correctly, but at the same time, it's how do we create this literacy awareness campaign through a foundation that can kind of run and organize that. So that's. Was the intent of it. I know that literacy for that foundation has already procured someone to help them with one part of that.
Right.
So you can't necessarily, in terms of procurement, take what is already an existing contract with agreed upon terms and, yeah, retro to that to new funding, right? So anyway, we're
working on it.
We're figuring that out. Yeah.
But I do know, I you know, and please correct me if you understand differently, but I think the main goal of this campaign is about how we can build literacy awareness in outside of the classroom. So we have so many things in place that are in the classroom. What can we do after school, both in the community and at home?
Can I ask a clarifying question around the literacy piece? Does that include efforts that happen in the school districts for English language learners, or is that a separate pocket of money for, you know, refugee or immigrant populations?
That would be separate. Some of these funds can certainly be used towards something like that in terms of helping what that looks like in the homes, right, for English language learners and a refugee population.
Okay. But ESL classes or things like that, that in the schools, that's not a part of this.
That's all, I think, within the Board of Ed budget and other budgets. So this is more what's happening in our communities and our homes. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you for that clarification.
Then when I saw this, I was excited, and I also got really nervous because the communities in which will be reached or you're trying to reach, it's very difficult. And for them to be able to hear a message that's conveyed in a way that they understand that this is about them and
empowerment
and their opportunity to look for ways to better, you know, their success of their young people. It's going to be quite a task, and those funds will go quickly, which is one of my biggest fears. But it's the understanding of the targeting of where these efforts will take place to have an effective, be effective in these communities where you're trying to reach. That's a big one. And I'm just hoping, I think going through someone that's already doing that work is a good idea, but I still think there's going to be some gaps there that are, they're going to be tough to, you know, let people know that, you know, these opportunities are there and this emphasis is there. I mean, I've been talking to people all over the place about emphasizing early literacy, and they're like, anyway, you know, there's things that are throwing people off by these decisions. One of them is not requiring students to be in school anymore. I mean, I think about that, and I'm like, well, wait, hold on a second. We want them to be literate, but we haven't required them to be in the classroom anymore, right? So that to me just throws me off a little bit. I'm trying to figure out how to get people to see that, you know, one thing should not be impacting another, but that's really hard to convey when you don't get to, you know, force somebody to do something. Yeah. You're asking them to take a look at them.
So did we see a dramatic increase in homeschooling post-COVID? Is that what happened? And we just not seeing kids come back to school?
We're seeing the attendance rates drop.
Oh, okay. Students.
So pre-COVID, it was 13% statewide. Okay. Chronically absent.
Okay.
Post-COVID, it's been about 26% over a couple of years to the point of, there was an increase in home. But not, these are students that are still enrolled in school.
Just not showing up.
That are not
showing
up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. I had no idea it was that big.
And there was a $16 million ongoing allocation, which was very fortunate for reading interventionists.
Cool.
And those reading interventionists are going to help specific school needs.
Cool.
And so if we have a large population of English language learning students, then that reading interventionist is going to engage differently than a school that maybe doesn't, right?
Cool.
So, and then the school principal teachers can leverage that resource. I'd also say, because what happens in West Valley is going to look very different than Montezuma Creek and San Juan, right?
Right. Absolutely.
And so, you know, it's what each of their needs look like and a little bit differently. And for that reason, the philanthropic community, the industry has really come to the table, and it's very early, but we're in the process, across those groups, including what is a literacy foundation.
Love it.
It's a nonprofit to where Montezuma Creek can apply for certain funds to this foundation in an ongoing way to say, this is what we need in Montezuma Creek versus maybe what we need in you know, Eastridge Elementary, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going to be, that's one thing we've heard over and over again. It's like, well, there's not one standard, one size fits all approach to literacy in our state, let alone even schools within and up your own district, right?
Right.
Very greatly. So this has enough latitude to address some of these issues. Or if we don't have students in school, what does that look like in terms of different engagement?
Yeah, really.
along that lens, so they could apply, you know, say for some literacy, some of these literacy funds to do what would be home visits using literacy as the academic or the content area, right? So there's going to be a lot of latitude for personalization, depending on school needs.
And can I just add that I think one of the things at the department level that we're excited about is how we can layer on to the work that's being done, both the in-school work and you know, what might be part of the awareness campaign, because we have so many existing programs that engage with students at different levels throughout CCE, whether it's at FCA or through our volunteerism work, and how do we engage our youth and through the lens of literacy. And there are so many existing programs, not just in our agency, but throughout the state, where we can use existing budgets, existing programming, and infuse this goal of literacy into that in a way that layers onto the other.
I don't want to interrupt. There's a question in the chat, and then I can ask mine.
Do you want to read that question so we can all hear it? John?
Do you want me to be it?
I guess I can read it. Commissioner Nguyen asked, Commissioner Nguyen, do you just want to ask your question?
Yeah. I wasn't sure if we're talking about the or when the funding was going to be announced to, like, for us to apply to, but we're in the developments of, like, a pre-healthcare English language curriculum with the intention of, you know, getting folks more proficient in healthcare-specific English to then help them get into, you know, healthcare certification and training programs, and funding would be great to help scale this. So I was wondering if one, this program, something like this, would be relevant to that funding, and two, when would that funding open?
Well, the funding that's coming through CCE is pass-through funding that will actually fund an awareness campaign. So it's not grant funding. Funding that Commissioner Nye was talking about is potential future grant funding.
Yeah, it is. That foundation is just getting started, so the timeline isn't there yet. Emphasis on yet. If you're looking for something sooner than later, I always put a plug in for the Intermountain Health Education Innovation Grants. That application period is open right now. Is the group familiar with Intermountain Health Education Innovation
Fund? I'm not, no.
It's been greatly so. Intermountain Health has stepped up in a very big way in the last about year and a half, in lots of different ways, but in this way specifically, in the last year and a half, where this and we could pull the website and share that in the chat if you'd like. But anyway, what the Intermountain Education Innovation Fund is really looking for is to provide a grant for things that might be a little bit different than what has been done. It creates, so it looks like that may be up if you Google it. Anyway, it's an opportunity for the Intermountain to kind of invest in some new thinking around how educational services are provided. And it asks to take a look at what's the intended, what's the objective, what's the intended outcome, and how will you know that you fit it, kind of a thing. So anyway, it's a very generous opportunity, and you know, there are application, opportunities, and awards have been significant in the past. So something to think about.
I did have one question. I'm curious for anyone in the room that can answer this. Have education or public awareness campaigns demonstrated effect in this area? And I ask that because in the public health sector, we often struggle to make that connection between our public health awareness and education campaigns and the actual outcomes. If anyone is aware of, like, research that indicates there's a clear connection between those two things, I would love it just for my own selfish reasons, but I am just curious about this particular space of an awareness campaign. I mean, I guess it might be a moot issue if that's exactly what the funding is directed to do. I'm just fascinated by that as a concept, as a strategy.
Right. I'm thinking outcomes is what I'm really curious about as well.
Yeah.
It's how those will be, how you'll be able to gather the information showing that it was a positive impact on the campaign. And where those numbers will come from, how you be gathering those numbers. I think that's critical.
And we won't be managing the campaign, so the foundation will be managing it. So we hope to work with them to encourage the
the reach, but also the outcome.
Yeah, they definitely want to set up something where they get feedback back on impact, because that makes all the difference in the world.
That's a very good question, right? You want to be able to demonstrate impact for effort and expense.
Yeah.
So, I know as far as some of these past thoughts, one thing that's a particular terms of concern to First Lady Cox is not only just to do something in terms of awareness, which is great when you get people to, but we need to get down into what are the barriers that families are experiencing and how do we bring awareness to that, but then impact that living room.
Right.
That point of contact. So I think, yeah, to the issue of just awareness campaigns, you might run some public service announcements, but do they have their effect? And is there any research that suggests that they do? I don't know. But just know the like First Lady and some of this philanthropic effort, they're very much interested in the impacts at the individual level that awareness campaigns could be directly tied to.
That's great. That's great.
Mm-hmm. So this conversation is great and actually leads us to not the next section, but the following one. So I'm going to, we can talk about the bylaws after this next section, particularly because we have Amy Aaron Terpstra who joined us from the Promise Partnership. They do amazing work. I know a lot of people at this table work really closely with them, but they do amazing work with community-based strategies around literacy. And I'm not just saying that because I worked for them for 5 years. But as we're thinking about these questions around what can we do to support community strategies that really do encourage all of our populations across Utah to be reading at grade level, and particularly as we look at those numbers for English language learners and for many of our populations across Utah, from rural to urban, there's just tremendous amount of differences in who's on grade level and who isn't. And so I think this commission is uniquely placed to be able to think about how do we extend that reach to some of the communities that we might have direct relationships with. So we invited Amy here to talk a little bit about the work that they have been doing, and then hopefully we can have a bit of a conversation about what we might be able to do as a commission.
Hey Amy, there, everybody. Well, can you hear me okay?
We can.
Okay. I just realized that my background looks a little strange. I've sat myself down in front of a portrait of some men in chairs. So sorry about the strange background, but you get me today out of office at the leadership retreat that we're having. But I'm so glad to be joining you. And I wonder if I'm having a little trouble seeing sort of who's in the boardroom that you're all sitting in. I recognize some voices, so I have a feeling there's some friends and partners in the room. Igor, would it be okay if we just did a quick, like, name, kind of quick intro around the table?
Absolutely. Yeah. You already know me, Igor Lemansky, Director of Multicultural Affairs.
Hi, Amy. Emmy Gardner, Holy Cross Ministries of Utah.
Hi, Amy. I'm Kat Potter. I'm the Deputy Director for the Department of Cultural and Community Engagement.
Okay. Hey, it's Nuna Phillips, DHHS.
Hey, Nuna.
Amy. Rich Nine. Good to see you.
Hey, Rich.
Annie Thompson, new Deputy Director of Multicultural Affairs.
Good to meet you.
Sean Newell, Amy. How are you?
Hey.
Hi, Amy. I'm Jenny, and I'm with the Division of Multicultural Affairs.
Oh, it's good to put a face with your name, Jenny. I've gotten lots of emails from you. And then when I see Kevin online.
Yeah. Hi, Amy. My name is Kevin Nguyen. I get to serve with the commission, but paid job is my work with Proxima and oversee partnerships and community engagement.
Awesome. See Dustin.
Hi, Amy. My name is Dustin Kong. I'm the partnerships coordinator for the Utah Division of Multicultural Affairs.
Awesome. And then it says four others, but I don't see who the four others are.
Rihanna, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hey there. This is Rihanna Medina. I'm the executive director of the Moab Valley Multicultural Center. We're a community resource center here over here in Moab.
And then Terhas.
Hi, Amy. My name is Terhas, and I'm here in Logan. I am a commissioner, and I work for USU Extension's Multicultural Nutrition Education Program.
Good to meet you.
Tom Ross.
Yes, good afternoon, Amy. Tom Ross, I'm with the Commission on Criminal Juvenile Justice. I'm the executive director. That's now changing, just coming out of this session, to the Department of Criminal Justice, and that will take effect starting in July. But obviously work with criminal justice policy, legislation, coordination with the governor's within the governor's office on those issues. So it's good to meet you.
Great to meet you.
And then Jeremy Shinoda, as a guest, do you want to say hi? Okay. Well, welcome, Jeremy. Go ahead, Amy.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. It's really great to be here with you. You know, this conversation sort of came about, Igor and I were talking a while back about the power of groups like yours, with the leadership that you have, with the positionality of a commission like this, and what it could be like to sort of continue to solve the challenge that's in front of us every day about how do we align and leverage the leadership of such groups to really important state priorities. So I will admit that I'm hoping to sort of get as many ideas out of this conversation as you all do, because one of the persistent sort of challenges in the type of work that I help lead is how do you share accountability for big results in our community that we're aiming to get, and how do you all make a meaningful contribution to those results? It's what the Promise Partnership, the partnership that I help staff, is all about. Many of you are part of it. Some of you, Rich has been a co-chair of the Promise Partnership Council. Sean and Nuna have been involved. And this work is super hard. When you think about outcomes from birth to career, or sometimes people say cradle to grave, and you know that every sector has a contribution to make. And even if you boil that down to just K through 12, we all know in our gut that K through 12 outcomes aren't just the responsibility of schools, right? We all have a role to play. Our health systems have a role to play. Our cultural institutions have a role to play. Our community centers, our nonprofits. And the key question and the nut that we're trying to crack in Promise Partnership is how do you help create a shared vision among partners across all those sectors? And how do you then drill down to an action plan that really helps every actor in that community see the contribution that they can make to moving the needle on a big outcome? So as, you know, I've been thinking a lot about what the state's kind of priorities are as it relates to the Promise Partnership work that I'm involved in. I think I heard when I came into the conversation you all talking about the state's literacy priority. We know that the governor and the first lady and many others have a lot of energy, rightfully so. If you look at the data like I do very regularly, you're not feeling great about it, right? You're not feeling great that we have nowhere near, you know, close to 100% of our third graders reading on grade level. And so I've really been just thinking, like, what can it look like for groups of people around the state, folks like yourselves, folks in the Promise communities across the region that our partnership supports, folks in community schools, et cetera, what could it look like for us all to contribute in our lane to the state's goals around literacy? Like, the schools are doing their part, right? They are buckling down. They are focusing on tier one instruction. They have the kind of paraprofessional angle in place. They're really working to make sure that kids aren't retained in grades. All of these things that we know that the legislation that was recently passed is focusing on our school system to do. So the key question I'm curious to get your perspective and maybe to do a little brainstorming with you on is, then what can a community do to kind of have a full court press around the schools with the same students, the same families that the school is serving? We know that the school is doing their thing and it's awesome. And it'll improve literacy, you know, at its pace, but what can we do to help accelerate that pace by aligning our efforts in the broader community for those same students and the same families? So that's the kind of key question I come to you with today. And I'm just, it sounds like you've already begun maybe some thinking about this, if I heard you correctly when I entered the virtual room, Rich. So maybe it's kind of hearkening back to that conversation you started before I came in. But especially curious to hear from the educators in the room and our state systems folks, like how are you thinking about this question of contributing to the state's literacy goal in the kind of lane that you're in?
Dr. Nye, I'm curious if you have any suggestions about particularly community-based strategies that you think this commission might be uniquely suited to support.
Yeah, I think for this commission where there is such a cross-agency emphasis, one, we identify where those opportunities exist within our agencies, but then collaborate on what each agency feels like they're able to bring to that. I know that some have already been thinking about this. I'm trying to remember which I'll look it up. But anyway, people are just asking themselves, the very first question should be, this is a statewide priority, literacy is a core value. What can we bring to that effort? And Amy, I know that's answering your question with maybe a question of everyone in the room to go down that road, but I think that's where it starts is to say, and it's just building on Amy on your questions to say, what are agencies already thinking about that within their space and influence and locus of control, what is it that they can bring to the literacy effort in our state? I think that would go a long way. And I know some are already beginning to think about it. I know, well, it was the tax commission. I'll use that. They're not at the table here, but here's an example, right? The tax commission, John Valentine called up and says, hey, we've got our offices are uniquely situated and we've got about 6 elementary schools within a couple of miles. We would love to let our employees go and volunteer and bring with students, right? And go provide, you know, just kind of that community-based support. And well, here's the tax commission doing volunteer work in schools. Great. You know what? That's what they felt like they could contribute under the tax commission, umbrella. So great. So I don't know. There's just a lot of different ways to think about that. I would say too, if an agency, or depending on who you represent, is in a place, feel free to call the schools, the charters, the districts and say, hey, this is an effort. What is it that you need? In your specific setting and then kind of go from there. But anyway, just some general thoughts as to say, well, where do we begin?
You know, as you're talking, I was thinking, and as you were sharing, Amy, so again, in our nonprofit, we've run, I think we have to get, I guess what I want to say is, can we also think of this initiative and this awareness campaign and get upstream? And I don't mean that in terms of prevention, but earlier than K through 12. And what I mean by that is, as you were speaking, I'm just thinking, I was thinking, well, I don't know how we would do this. And then I thought, duh, we're doing this already. And what I mean by that is within our education pillar of our organization, we run a parents as teachers program. It's a nationally based evidence-based Perfect. Curriculum, right? And we're blue ribbon certified for 0 to 3. And we do that in a bilingual, bicultural way for families. And what was really interesting is we've been doing this now for 15 years. And we did a Whitney study with the folks from the U back in 2018 and found that those English language learner kids that we engaged in parents as teachers, right, helping parents be their kids' first and best teacher, those kids went to kindergarten and maintained the gains of that program and were still on the same reading level as their English-speaking peers in fourth grade, right? So we got to start thinking younger and we got to start thinking early on, right? You know, in that kind of public health model. And so like, I think, and I know that like the health departments, we're doing parents as teachers. We met with Dr. Neil Davis a couple of times and nurse family partnership. But I think there's like some really interesting things that the various health departments are doing, but what can we do in the literacy space that's beyond schools, right? Yeah, yeah. And that really is working kind of early and often.
And that, Amy, that's that cradle, right? That's your yep. space. That's
big
that
time, cradle space.
That
yeah.
absolutely has to be hit.
Yeah.
Commissioner Medina, do you have your hand up?
I do. I love what she was just saying, and I wanted to springboard off of that is saying that my organization is a community-based organization. We offer language interpretation, and one of the places that we do interpret for is parents as teachers program in our community, which is run by our local health department. And I think another place that's
very important that we do a lot of language accesses in the schools. And that is sometimes disciplinary meetings. That's a lot of parent-teacher conferences. This weekend, our nonprofit's going to be doing over 100 parent-teacher conferences. Sometimes that's just a teacher call to a parent, but a lot of times that's the nurse making phone calls to get dental health for the students too. But all of that is, if the kids aren't healthy, they can't learn too. And I think, you know, what Amy was saying, what can you do in your lane for multicultural communities, is something in the state of Utah right now is we only have licensure for medical interpreters, and then the courts have their own certification, but we don't have a community interpreter education program. We don't have a registry. We don't have a licensure. We don't have a certification. It's something I've been talking to Igor about. It's something I've been talking to Doppel about. And I think what happens often specifically in education with the schools is the bilingual teachers and the paras are pulled, and they're doing work that isn't, you know, they're doing work on top of their work to help out with the kiddos with the second languages. And if we had more people that were trained, because there's a lot of great training that goes into just the basics of how to be an interpreter, when you wear which hat is the role of the language interpreter versus a cultural broker. There's a lot to know there. And if that was more accessible, I think it would just really help the parents be more involved in their children's literacy education. Thank you.
Other organizations or agencies you want to share a little bit about what they're already doing or what they would like to be doing?
We had a program called Read Across America. It was kind of a corporate thing where we would send volunteers to tech schools. And as it was kind of high level, if you will, as we started working with the schools, kind of what he was saying, you start to learn some of the different challenges and some of the different ways that you can help beyond what you think you're doing, right? And so that opens up the doors for opportunities in other aspects. So we work with Bachman Elementary specifically in this park. And they were, we were able to, you know, we actually helped support building a bridge to get kids across the Jordan River, quicker access, so they didn't have to go all the way around, wow, you know, to the light and do all the different things there. So there were some different opportunities that rose. They were able to partner and actually listen and get in the same room together.
Commissioner Nguyen.
Yeah, I don't know how relevant this is to the conversation, but I remember when I was doing consulting work in Idaho, there's a really strong network of what they call community schools. And I think United Way supports them in Idaho. And I think there might be an effort here with United Way supporting community schools. But essentially, it's like recognizing that schools are these trusted places that children not only go to school to, but it's a hub for where parents can come as well to get resources. And in these schools in Idaho, they had not only, of course, the educators, but they integrated after-school programming that built upon what they learned during the day. And then they brought in the hospital systems to do sort of this, like, clinical community linkage where they do screenings. And if anything pops up, they then have this sort of direct link to the hospital clinics or the hospital systems that are close to that school. And the food bank is also there as well, along with mental health and behavioral health services. They had people from the health department there with SNAP and WIC, also helping them apply. And in California, they've also had this model as well, and they have some pretty cool reports and research out there that show that, especially for the underserved communities, I mean, there's big improvements in test scores, absenteeism, literacy. Of course, we know that if people are better connected to healthcare and nutrition, that, of course, other health metrics improve, which then come back to then creating a more stable environment for these kids to then learn and improve on, you know, some of their literacy levels. And so I think, you know, this model works really well in Idaho. Obviously, it works well in California. And I think we can piggyback off of that and maybe do it here more in Utah. So I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up. Just to draw a couple points of connection. So Promise Partnership Utah does support community schools, and we run something called the Utah Community Schools Coalition, and they're actually having a convening later this month. I will forward that invitation to Igor. Maybe you can get that out to the commission. Everyone is welcome. But you described that really beautifully, Commissioner, and there is an absolute function of a community school that is about, I call it like removing the barriers that poverty puts in the way for education so that students can just show up ready to learn and teachers can just show up concerned with teaching and not all the other things that are always on their plate. And there's a huge family engagement component of community schools, which seems like a really important lever to help improve literacy. And, you know, you all have scratched on that. So I'll make sure to get that out to you. And you'd all be more than welcome to attend that one day convening later in March.
Thank you, Amy. Commissioner Ross.
Yes, thank you. I'll keep my comments short because I think most of us are saying kind of a similar theme here. And to me, this is really about amplification. So, you know, to give an example, years ago, I was a chief of police in Bountiful. I worked in law enforcement in Bountiful for 34 years. And one of the judges, Judge Kay, and I started a Community That Cares program. And the first thing we saw as we were starting to build this is the areas that we were focused on, which obviously was youth. It was trying to keep youth out of trouble, trying to help give them opportunities, maybe spaces they could go to and be engaged in positive activities. But what we saw is there were a lot of programs that touched on the same things, but they're not always connected. And in fact, most of the time they're not. And I think this is some of the comments that have already been made. But I think the opportunity we have here is we have the First Lady and the Governor of the state that are prioritizing this. That's a big amplification. And if all of our religious, civic, community, nonprofits, if all of us buy into that literacy is a building block foundational piece, without it, individuals will struggle greatly throughout, you know, their lives until they get to a point where they are able to, you know, be able to read, write, communicate at levels that allow them to build their lives and move forward. If we are able to just every one of those locations, I think it was even mentioned, if SNAP programs, if our food pantries, if there were something about literacy and books there in every one of those spaces, I think that we have a chance of branding this, which is really what I see the governor and the First Lady wanting to do, is make this such a topic in our state that no matter where you go, you're hearing it, and parents or youth are hearing it, and hopefully, even though this is focused on reading a grade level at third grade, it's really about everyone, you know, and being able to enhance their literacy skills. So that's where I think that groups like this can make a difference, is in all the spaces that we touch, if we all agree that this is a message that we want to move forward, then maybe we just help by making it part of the spaces that we're in, and then we're enhancing and amplifying.
You know, Commissioner, I think you just said so much that like triggered all these little points for me. So a couple of thoughts related to what you're saying. You sort of started off by saying like, you know, everything, like there's a lot of stuff that can contribute to literacy and or any given outcome. And so one kind of note or one thing that we try hard to do in our partnerships is it's easy to say, oh, you're doing this, you're doing that. So therefore we are, you know, all doing something important that's moving the needle on literacy. And that's not necessarily true. So what we have found to be really important is of making all of the strategies really visible and measuring them, like actually bringing data to help understand if your strategies are at a scale, together at a scale that's actually capable of helping to move the needle on third grade reading. So there's like hours of conversation we could have on that front, but that would be important, I think, for a group who's really rallying around something, to get hyper clear on what you're each doing in your lane, and then making sure you're measuring it. And kind of relatedly, you know, the lane analogy is maybe a little insufficient when we're really talking about what true alignment means. Like, I really think about, like, if you have a bunch of really talented musicians, which is like representative of our nonprofit space, our state systems, our different communities, et cetera. If they're all just playing whatever tune they want, it's going to be sort of a nightmare to listen to, right? What you need is everyone needs to have the same sheet music, and then there needs to be a conductor who's sort of helping everybody play together. And so when you're thinking about a commission or a partnership or a community that's like acting together toward an aim, really getting clear about what that sheet music is. It's in our case, in many of our communities, it's a shared action plan that has everybody's strategies listed out really clearly. And then the conductor is, you know, our folks from my team or backbone team. For you all, it might be, you know, the staff of the commission, whoever, but there has to be somebody who's holding it all together. And then the final point I'll make is, you know, sometimes this work can feel really big when you're thinking about it at a state scale or when you're thinking about it at an all people scale. So we really focus in, we do systems work for sure, and we do community schools work, but we also do community work. And often when you think about places where people live, places where people worship, places where people go to school. And so rallying around several communities and really thinking about how to concentrate your efforts there may make your work a lot more visible early on and feel like you can really see that needle move. Mentioned in an introduction, I heard Moab mentioned in somebody else's introduction. So you have some places represented in this commission. And so I just got a little curious about what it could look like to focus early efforts in a couple of places to see what you could possibly do and move there, especially when you focused in on multicultural communities in those places. Suddenly you've zoomed in on something where you, if you really focus there and with those folks, you might actually make a huge difference.
I really appreciate that, Amy. Commissioner Tafari, do you want to say a little bit about Logan and some of the work that's going on there, or some of the things that you feel might be needed that aren't there?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you, Igor. I know we have discussed this with you a couple of weeks ago. I don't think we have the resources mentioned by any in Logan, but I guess I work with many community advocates and community health workers who serve multicultural communities. We do have parent liaisons in each school. So maybe engaging them, involving them in this campaign, in this initiative, will be the best way. I have the opportunity to talk with few advocates in the community who are working in the school spaces. They see the need, and the conversation I have with them is they think that there is a lot of resources, more resources like Ogden, Salt Lake, but less resources in Logan. But there is a big gap in literacy and the other thing, and thank you for sharing, Amy, is the language access. We haven't had interpretation services until, I think, 2 years ago for parent-teacher conferences. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of multicultural community families using their own kids to do parent-teacher conferences mm-hmm. About 2-3 years ago. But that's now changing, which is amazing. We do have few after-school programs. So I guess there is a little bit of initiative, but I think this campaign is really highlighting the need, highlighting that there is the support from the governor is going to be a big thing. Usually the work is done by volunteers, by small nonprofits, but I guess if there is a support from if it's a statewide support, if it's coming from the governor, that could be a good encouraging for those smaller efforts. But I would love to hear if Promise Utah has any resources in Northern Utah, if the services are also available in the communities in Logan, that would be nice.
Yeah, so it's a great question. So our current footprint right now is much more sort of in Salt Lake County and a little bit around the Wasatch Front. However, we did just pass legislation this session at 11:55 p.m. on Friday night, so it really squeaked by. It was a nail-biter. I'm still, like, my ulcer is still recovering from Friday's adventures. So the legislation creates a framework for what we call place-based partnership work, which is sort of what I'm speaking to. And it, so that's great. And one of the things that we're going to be doing in, I think, early May is hosting two conversations outside of the Wasatch Front with partners about what it looks like to do place-based partnership work, cradle-to-career work, we call it as well. And we're bringing in some kind of experts from Appalachia, Kentucky, who do this work in rural Kentucky and a few other places around the country. And we're really just going to have a conversation about what it looks like to do this type of work and alignment work that we're talking about here, including literacy, but also, you know, focus on many other cradle to career outcomes. So I will, if you are interested on maybe, you know, let Igor know, and I would love to add any of you to the list. We're actually probably going to host one of these in Logan. And the other one will be probably in Richfield. So we're trying to get a Southern and a Northern conversation going. So I don't want to blast you all and spam you all, but if you do have interest, let Igor know, and I'll make sure that you get that information so we can continue that exact conversation.
And then
it did not get funded.
And then I also just wanted to highlight, Commissioner Tafari, it sounds like you're advocating for something similar as Commissioner Medina when you're talking about having community interpreters who can help at the school level and help at the community level, and that there's an existing need for that, that that's not being fulfilled. Would you say that's right?
Yes. Yes, there is a big need. Logan has grown a lot, and our multicultural communities have grown the last 5 years. So, yes, there is a big need. There is some efforts. Cache County is okay, but Logan is a Logan City School District. They still have a big gap in language access interpretation, especially when they want to engage the parents. And I think for literacy, to address literacy issues, I think engaging the parents is key, because it doesn't end on the schools or the after school programs, because it has to involve the parents, right? And most of our multicultural communities, their parents work long hours.
Yes.
So that's why I really am pushing for involving community health workers, community advocates who understand those work schedules, interpretations, and really creating community spaces where the parents are there. So meeting them where they are will be more easier.
Yeah.
So Hudson, do you also work with CRIC up there? I mean, we've worked with, I think it's CASH, Refugee and Immigrant Center. It's an acronym, but I wondered about them having interpreters in language, because I know they offer ESL, because we were working with them on a citizenship initiative last year, and they were a partner agency up north. And I think they're based in Logan.
Yes, yes. I remember, is it the citizenship initiative with the USCIS? Yes, yes.
Yes,
I work,
yes.
Yeah. I'm involved with Cache Refugee and the Immigrant Connection, and there is also another small nonprofit, Logan Refugee Services and Athletics United. They all do the same thing, but they focus on different areas. There is a belonging part of it, and there is casework. So yeah, there is a lot of need, and we do have the English Learning Center.
Yes.
For adult education, but for literacy specific to kids, to K through 12 or even under. And I think the other big thing, I know, Igor, I mentioned this with you, is we have a daycare system that we encourage families, grandparents to do that, and maybe resources for them so they can start early. Most of our multicultural families, they use that kind of daycare resources, where a community member or someone from the same country have those daycares supported by the Department of Workforce Service and Care About Child, create a great program at USU. Maybe starting working with those families, working with those more family-based daycares and preschool. And we do have a Head Start. We have the Micron Head Start or Centro de la Familia up in Logan. Mostly they work with multicultural families from agricultural and migrant workers. I think focusing on those programs and maybe sharing about this initiative, about this campaign, involving them from now, I mean, not after we start the program, right? Not after implementation, but from the beginning will be a good idea.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Tafari. Commissioner Medina?
I think Chair Haas just had said what I think didn't say as well, is that it's the parents' involvement that is really key for what I was trying to bring up with the community interpreter, that program I think that is needed, because it, we kind of look at the interpreter field as its own, like interpreters are interpreters and community health workers are community health workers. And then we have some community health workers that are bilingual, but they're not trained to how to be an interpreter. And here in rural areas, we wear so many hats. So we get to have these experiences. But what I know to be true is when a community health worker is trained to be a community interpreter, it empowers parents, because we know when to take off our advocate hat, where I'm helping you and I'm speaking for you and I let you speak and I'm just being the language conduit. And then parents get used to doing things for themselves, and they just call, and they call us all the time and just say, I need to call the school and tell them my child's sick, or they need this or they need that, or I need to change the parent meeting. But they get used to doing things for themselves because they just need to call and they need help with the language and they know that's all they need help with. So I think that's the missing piece, is empowering the parents to help with the literacy piece.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate all of the ideas, and I think this is a lot for us to start with. And I can follow up with everyone individually about some of these ideas that we can then take into our retreat. And I want to thank Amy. I know we're taking a little bit extra of your time. Thank you for joining us, and I'll forward on those links that you sent me. Anything you want to close with or add?
No, just thank you. This has been really helpful for jogging my thinking about how to frame some conversations with our partnerships. I'm really eager to see what you all might end up doing around something like early literacy. So I'll be watching and listening. It's just really exciting to hear so much energy about some of the youngest residents in our state. So thank you all. Thank you for your leadership.
Yeah, thank you, Amy.
All right, take care, everybody.
So, like I mentioned, for our retreat in April, I'm going to follow up with everyone individually about some of the ideas that you brought up, as well as if there are other initiatives that you can think about that we're going to want to discuss. The April retreat will be an opportunity for us to do a deep dive on all of these initiatives and figure out what can we do collectively as a commission. I'm really hoping we can have 100% attendance at the retreat. And so it is April 9th from 8:30 a.m. to 3:30. We'll be providing breakfast. We'll be providing lunch. We have a wonderful facilitator who's joining us. He's been doing a lot of work in government and the private sector, and he's going to help us with the design and facilitation of the day. Just to ask, and we're going to host it at the Capitol, just to give you all an opportunity to maybe be a little more closer to your offices. Is anyone not able to join that? Just asking now if everyone can make it. Yep. It's an opportunity for a slight bit of public shaming if you say no.
I don't know if it would be Director Gruber or myself attending, but one of us would be there.
Okay, wonderful.
Iger, this is Tom. I think it's gonna work out, but I've got, there's a meeting in New York that I'm supposed to be attending, that I represent Utah in, that they were originally saying the 10th or the 14th of April. If it's the 10th, then I would be flying down on the 9th. But since they haven't confirmed it and it hasn't landed, I'm kind of hoping that maybe the meeting's going to be pushed back a little bit. That would be the only reason that I'm aware of right now that could be a conflict, but I am planning on it.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Ross. And particularly thank you to Commissioner Tafari and Commissioner Medina for driving down from Logan and from Moab. We really appreciate you being willing to come all the way out there. Something else that I want us to think about for the April retreat is the new set of bylaws. When I first came on, I found a set of bylaws in our draft folder that it seems like there's been some conversations about bylaws, but we've never gotten them passed as a commission. It really is just an opportunity to establish some internal procedures based on our statute and just making sure, that we all understand how we function internally as a commission, how we make decisions. One of the big changes in the bylaws is that, the co-chairs would be one member from the cabinet side and one member from the community side. So it would really give us an opportunity to have both of those perspectives and participation from both of the parts of this commission. And so I would encourage everybody to take a look at those bylaws. If you have any questions, please reach out to me from now till the retreat. And then hopefully at the retreat, we'll be able to take a vote and pass those bylaws. And we'll also be electing two new co-chairs. So we'll be thanking Luna and Sean for their incredible work. And it'll be a bit of a change in a new chapter. So thank you so much, Sean.
Can I add one thing about the bylaws?
Yes.
So one of the questions that came up while we were initially putting the bylaws together is, do we need an indemnity clause for board members, for commission members in that? And I just want to let you know we consulted with our attorney. And the answer is no, because we are a state advisory board. And there is, you know, if anything were to happen that would a lawsuit against this commission, the state's immunity protection would kick in for both the state employees and the non-state employees. So just if that comes up while you're reviewing it, we have looked at that and do not need it.
Any questions about the retreat itself in April or anything else from the literacy conversation that so we might want to add to it.
Any pre-work or anything you need us to come prepped for the April?
Yeah. So
sorry, the nerd in me is always wanting to be prepared.
Yeah. So I'm going to look at these notes
okay. And
some of the specific projects that you all brought up. Okay. I'll be reaching out to you all individually okay. To have a conversation with you about what are some of the initiatives we might be able to move towards. I think ideally we'll be able to spend a lot of time at the retreat getting to know each other, but specifically being able to craft, you know, what are the areas that we can work on together? What might be some effective subcommittees based on the work your agency or your organization does? So I'll be reaching out to everyone individually. Probably Eddie and I will be having some of those conversations, and we might be bringing the facilitator as well so you can get to know him and he can help us with the design.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Any other questions?
You have that.
I do.
Dr. Nye.
For the legislative session, Senate Bill 295 passed. And this bill, I should probably pull it up, but anyway, this bill, different things. One, for higher ed, it allows different viewpoints, intellectual diversity, and that was responding to Weber State, right? When Weber State had a guest speaker that was coming in, they were given a list of words they couldn't say. That wasn't the intent. So this bill helped clean that up. Great. You know what? Our institution of higher education ought to be, it's a great place for open debate and academic thought, right, among other things. There's also a part there in K-12 that we're still trying to figure out its impact. And this has everything to do with curricular and non-curricular clubs. And one thing that the bill suggests is you can't have a curricular club that promotes, disparages, degrades, you have to look at the language, any personal identity characteristic, for example, right? That's what it uses, personal identity characteristic. So you can have your clubs, which are generally after school clubs, things like that. So you have the people of Polynesia, that's been a club, it's a long-standing fixture. Girls in STEM is kind of been a thing. But the question that we're wrestling with right now, I'm wondering if you've all had a chance to look at this, what does it look like for Latinos in Action? Because it is a curricular club.
Right.
So under this bill, there's some question among the schools, K-12, and the district saying, oh, can we not have Latinos in Action anymore? Because that's a personal identity characteristic, right?
Right.
LA themselves would say that they are a curricular club. They have courses that are taught during the school day, during instruction time. They're not listed as Latinos in Action courses as electives, but they are Latinos in Action courses, right? And they would rather, Latinos in Action would rather have that versus just an after school club because of the curriculum that they put with that. Anyway, there's a lot of question right now as to whether or not a group like Latinos in Action can still operate under SB 295.
Wow. I hadn't even thought about that, but wow.
Some of what you're saying is reminiscent of HB 261, which all record data agencies had to implement. Is this intending to, how does this relate? Did that, was HB 261 not required in that context and now this bill is requiring that, or is there any relation between the two?
Well, there is a relation between the two, and it's an interesting, I mean, it's the question we need to answer. Okay. So this is like the extension of 261.
Okay, it is an extension.
Uh-huh. And the first part of it was a cleanup of 261 mm-hmm. for higher ed. And this other piece, though, so the sponsors, having spoken with them, they're like, well, no, we don't feel like this would, and Representative Paul said something even on the floor, right, as the floor sponsor, said something in effect of, well, this shouldn't impact Latinos in Action. But then, and that may be her intent and her understanding, the language of the law is having a chilling effect, though, by school district attorneys. They're looking at that going, well,
And the school districts are super cautious, right?
Right.
I mean, just given kind of that, was it 2 years ago, the whole sort of bad therapy thing, and so they're really trying to stay in compliance with the legislature, right?
They are. So just know as you engage with different groups that operate these different kind of clubs within our communities, that right now there's a lot of, people are asking a lot of questions as to whether or not 295 impacts them. They can't have it. I mean, even on the floor, it said, it said girls in STEM or girls in code, you'd add kids in code, right? So, So it's part of the framework. Girls in code kind of originated organically to say, hey, we don't see a lot of female representation in STEM related fields.
Right.
Let's generate some interest among, a targeted need. So anyway, just more to come on that, but to the degree that you're navigating that or you're looking at that or you're hearing about that, just know that that's a little context that impacts certainly the potentially the work of this commission. So.
Yeah. And it sounds like the question around how exactly it's going to impact it and how the schools will interpret it, it's still up there.
It is very much in the air.
Each school district can do it, right? And school districts each can respond differently, correct? It's not like it's a state.
Well, and that's where the language in the bill is left open to some interpretation. When you have interpretation, you have different courses of action so that are pursued, right? Until there's some maybe cleanup language or there is a lawsuit, right? Until define some of the some of that. So just know right now that that's creating some consternation because people won't be in compliance. Sometimes there's an interpretation.
Yes, Work with several school districts that are that way because we place therapists in school districts, right, bilingual, bicultural therapists, and it's interesting to see what some school districts will allow versus other school districts, especially around the whole sort of skill teaching, character building, all of that kind of stuff that was there too. And that's why I was asking because I was, at least in the districts where we are, we have both ends of the spectrum.
Right.
I'm just bringing it. This is awesome. We want it, right? Versus, no, you can't do it.
Right.
But again, with the, we need to stay in compliance with what the legislature said. So yeah, different interpretations by their district attorneys or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. For the time being.
Yeah.
Until something more definitive comes out.
Okay.
I know it's creating some angst.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer because Latinos in Action is an amazing program.
They do.
And very kind of research and evidence based and, you know,
They
Service, right?
It's amazing. Yeah.
It's really outrageous. The BSU students sort of say, feel that.
Yeah, exactly. Just stuff them. Yeah, that's right.
Try it out, but there is curriculum embedded in those.
And which one were you just saying, John? What's that one?
Black student.
Student Union, too. Wow.
Another fantastic. Yeah. Anyway, so these are the questions.
Yeah.
What does it look like? Anyway. Under the other category.
thanks for the update on that.
More for the retreats?
More groups
than you do the retreat, yeah, yeah.
And then we have these forms also.
Yeah, if you want to... Do you want to talk about those?
You're official. I'm not. Right. I signed it.
Would you be willing to talk about these?
Sure. So we have an agreement form. This is not part of the bylaws. It's something internal. And it's just to structure what we expect out of our commission members. Probably the biggest one is the attendance rate. We would love for commission members to attend 75% of meetings if possible. And, you know, if they're not able to attend, if you could provide a designee, someone who could attend in your place, so that way they can go on your behalf, that would be great. Right now it's just in draft form, so the commission would just need to vote on it at the retreat. So if you could take a look at it, if you have any questions, please feel free to get a hold of us. We'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Ideally, we'd like 100% attendance, right? But 75% would be, we'd love to be able to agree to that. So do you want to do Luna part of the kind of other business?
I think we started on other business, so it can almost be easy for me to say, yeah, everybody good? I want to thank everybody for being here. I want to thank everyone for the robust conversation. This has been good. This is the pathway we want to take on the commission to start to really dive into issues that we can actually impact and be a part of, and to help the state navigate as well through the organizations in which we're involved with. So I really want to thank everybody for being here and being a part of the conversation. And I'm really looking forward to the retreat. So we'll get a chance, like Igor said, to know one another a little bit better, but to actually know what the work is that each of us are doing and how we can integrate that into the work that the state is doing this week. So with that, I'm going to be quiet. And we're almost set tonight, but I'm giving you some time back.
Sure. I mean, it's maybe just to see if there's any other business or anything you want to all bring up before we close.
I had mentioned to Igor before the meeting started, and I don't know if it's, again, the role of MCA, but I think just given the tenor of this legislative session, I wondered about, like, the conversations around the Utah Compact that, you know, Governor Herbert had put together, and is there a way that we as a commission can come from a place of compassion and kindness and get us back to our Utah way, which is truly that embracing of the beauty that is the diversity of the people in our state, and just looking at how we can begin to heal from what was a very divisive legislative session for our refugee and our immigrant communities. And so I just didn't even know if that was a role for MCA or how that would happen, but can that compact be reaffirmed, or is it politically not the right time to do that? I don't know. But again, I guess I just, like, again, as our nonprofit, we're a faith-based nonprofit. We just come from this place of compassion and love for all humanity. And how do we start to bring that back as a mindset for our communities?
We need that.
Yeah, we need that healing somehow.
Yeah.
To that point, Igor, and I apologize, I haven't read the bylaws yet, and I you and I might have had a conversation about this. One of the roles of this commission is to provide recommendations to Lieutenant Governor.
Yes.
So I wonder if a place for that could be in that set of recommendations, assuming that everybody is in agreement.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we can certainly talk about that at the retreat. I think certainly the spirit of what you're saying around how do we engage all of our communities mm-hmm. in a way that helps them feel like they belong
right.
and also emphasizes that sense of we're all part of the same community,
mm-hmm.
Whether that's through the Utah Compact or whether that's through our literacy initiatives.
Mm-hmm.
I think that question of how do we make sure that that spirit is across what we are doing and we're making clear recommendations on that, it's a great topic.
I think it would be great to illuminate that again for
yes.
folks.
Right.
Where we were headed for quite some time, the
right,
right direction we were headed in.
Right.
And we're to bring some awareness of where we've been derailed. That's just me.
Yeah.
And how we can come back
right
to getting to where that
that PAC was meaningful. Mm-hmm. And that we haven't changed. And I think that's really critical, mm-hmm. to be able to convey that in a way that folks will receive it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's there. I hope so. Yeah.
That's where we were headed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're doing great things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still think Utahns do care about being good neighbors to
each other. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how we make sure that's a part of what we're doing, and we're emphasizing that. That's very important.
Absolutely.
Any other business or topics before we close? Sean, do you want to call for a vote to adjourn?
Yes. Can I get a motion to adjourn the meeting? We've got a motion. Do we get a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Well, thank you, everyone, for being here in attendance, and looking forward to seeing everybody next month.
All right. Thank you. See you later.
Thanks, everybody.